You are listening to Press Pass, brought to you by GNAT TV.
Hello and welcome to Press Pass on GNAT TV. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today on Tuesday, March 8th. It's also a great pleasure to be joined today by two exceptional journalists. We're really pleased to have with us today Susan Allen, who's the managing editor of the Bennington Banner. She's been at that post since last September. Before that, she was the managing editor of the Barry Montpelier Times Argus, has also written for the Burlington Free Press and the Associated Press, and also served as Montpelier assistant city manager before coming down here to Southern Vermont. So, Susan, great to have you with us today. Thank you very much for making the time.
Nice to be here, Andrew.
We're also very pleased to have with us today Michael Albans, who's also a reporter with the Bennington Banner. He arrived roughly around the same time as Susan did back last September and brings an extraordinary background to his work at the Banner. He's written for the New York Post, the New York Daily News, freelance for the Wall Street Journal, New York Magazine, before moving out to Montana, working out there for several years, and then finally coming back east. And we're really glad to have you with us today, Michael. Thank you for making the time as well.
Well, thank you for the invite. I'm glad to be here.
Well, okay. I guess I thought, just to kind of get us started here, one place might be just to kind of ask you both about what are your thoughts so far about being in Bennington and covering the Bennington area, Bennington County. What has struck you the most about how different, perhaps, this beat is to the previous beats that you've both had? And Susan, I'll throw that one to you first. How has Bennington struck you so far compared to, let's say, Montpelier or Burlington?
It's a great question. First of all, I will say, I'll just make a note that Michael and I did start around the same time. And I want to note that that was a real commitment by the owners of the paper, who are new. They bought the paper shortly before we came on board. It was a real commitment by them to commit to the local paper. And I really appreciate that, because this comes at a time when papers are closing or cutting way back on staff. And we have not had to do that. And I feel really proud about that. And it proves their commitment and Michael and my commitment to local journalism. There are some things that I'm finding are universal in Vermont journalism, having covered it in the Associated Press in Burlington and now down in Southern Vermont. Everybody wants local news, local, local, local. I can't get local enough. If I put the Girl Scout meeting in the paper, it matters to people. They care about it. They love local news. When I came on in September, there were a lot of complaints that the Bennington Banner ran Brattleboro Reformer stories all the time, and people didn't like that. They want the Bennington Banner on the front page, and that's what I've tried to give them, almost exclusively Bennington Banner news on the front page. I think Michael will have an interesting perspective because he's coming from a much broader world. But there are universal pieces in Vermont. People love their local paper. They're very committed to it. They stand by you in tough times. We've had some tough times at the Bennington Banner just in September with delivery issues. People have stood by us. Those things seem to be universal in Vermont. People love local news and their local papers.
All right, Michael, and over to you then. What's been your reaction so far to the Bennington beat?
Well, I just fell in love with Vermont. It's such a beautiful place physically, and the people have been so friendly. My professional opinion is that, I'm so used to, even in Montana, believe it or not, people being at scenes, four or five or six or seven crews at a scene or at the courthouse, and competition and all this other stuff, and it was kind of shocking for me to go to the courthouse and be the only reporter to be covering this. And it really struck me that if it wasn't for places like the Bennington Banner telling these stories, I don't know if people would hear about this stuff. A lot of it would go unnoticed. Certainly, we do get some coverage from some TVs out of Albany and other places, but the kind of stories we're doing, where we're telling these really humanistic stories of people's lives, I think that would go away, and it's really giving me an awesome sense of responsibility to bring those stories for as long as we possibly can and hold people accountable as well. And it's a real interesting dynamic. There's a lot of poverty here. There's also a lot of wealth. There's a lot of diversity in thought. And I think that it's a really interesting place to be in 2022.
You know, we've been hearing a lot about challenges to local journalism in particular, challenges to journalism in general, for that matter, but in particular challenges that small papers face. And I wonder if you could both talk to us a little bit about that. I mean, obviously, there's been competition, I guess you'd say, from the internet for now well over 20 years. And then more recently, perhaps social media, although that's hardly a news story. But I wondered, what are the big challenges you see to having papers like The Banner or The Manchester Journal or Brattleboro Reformer continue on and, as Michael was just saying, report those stories that people would probably never hear about otherwise from a reliable news source? I mean, we can all go on Facebook and read somebody's opinion about what happened, but to get a, you know, an accurate, unbiased kind of a report is another thing altogether.
One of the things is demographic, Andrew. So older people read newspapers, and younger people, like my children, do not read newspapers. They don't subscribe. They get all their news online. One of my kids actually subscribes to the New York Times, but online. He doesn't get it delivered to his door anymore. And so I think what we're going to see in our industry, including the Bennington Banner, is a move in that direction, a move away from print, because that demographic is just not going to be around forever. And a move toward easier ways to get the news, local news, to people in a different manner, the way they want to see it. I don't know what Michael thinks about that.
Yeah, I really think that besides the way we're going to get our news, I think it is really important for a community to have that reporter knock on their door. And, you know, internet news sources and faraway places are not going to have that happen. And I pride myself on getting out there. It's one of the things I learned early from people like Pete Hamill and Jimmy Breslin. You've got to get out there. You've got to see people face to face. You've got to talk to them and look at their face and understand their pain and have empathy for what's happening. And that's the only real way to write this for people. And I'm proud that we're able to still do that. It's always a financial worry. I mean, for instance, at the Daily News, we had a staff just of photographers of 23 people. And we had things like LexisNexis, where if we were doing research on a person, we could instantly find out what their address was or what their phone number was or where they were. And so I've had to learn to get around things like that because those services are just not affordable for local papers. But there are ways around that, and there are ways to take your time and really do this the right way. And the only way to do that is with boots on the ground. And whether we go fully digital or not, I think that the real important part of having the local paper is those people who are willing to knock on doors and find out what the true story is and meet each other face to face. And I think we're losing that a little bit in our country with all these papers going under.
I couldn't agree more. And if I could add quickly two things to that that involve Michael. He covers courts and he sits in courts all day for several days. And he started popping up with these stories about suspected gang members. It just, here'd be a case, here'd be a case, here'd be a case. And he started putting the pieces together from sitting in that courtroom. And he went to law enforcement and he went to city officials. And everybody was mum. Nobody would talk to him. And he kept hammering on it until he finally got police to admit, we have a gang issue in southern Vermont. And they are focused on it. And they are taking action with task force. He had to be in that courtroom. He had to put the pieces together. Another great example was in covering the legislature, we were talking about homelessness. And it's millions of dollars and this many people and glazed eyes. Michael went to the motels where the homeless were living. He knocked on doors and he found families in southern Vermont and put a human face on this issue that had been a dollar and cents issue. And that's why you need boots on the ground, regardless of what your format, if we're online or we're not. We need those people on the ground and local journalism. There'll always be a place I think, for local journalism.
Well, just to build on that a little bit, Michael, let me turn back to you here. You've had two stories recently that I found pretty interesting. One was in one of your papers last week about the Sunrise Center coffee hour for young parents. And then you had one in today's paper about why victims of domestic assault are very often unwilling to come forward or press charges against those who may have assaulted them. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about what gave you the ideas for those stories, or how you came about them, or and how you built it step by step.
Well, it's basically what Sue said. It's spending hours sitting in the courthouse, looking at cases, talking to people, and eventually these patterns start coming out, and you start seeing what's happening. And so you put two and two together and start realizing, well, there's been a lot of that going on, so let me reach out to the state's attorney. Let me see what she says. Is she seeing the same thing I'm seeing? We talked to people from domestic assault organizations that help victims and what they're seeing and what the issues are. And once you localize the issue and find out exactly what it is, then you can start asking those hard questions. Why does this happen? What in our society is allowing this to happen? And what are the reasons for it? And what can we do about it? And so we knocked on doors again, and we found out information, and we talked to people, and some people are on the record, some people are off the record. But it turns out that there is an issue with that, and there are reasons, and it makes people think, and it makes people come to action. As far as the coffee thing goes, I've been hooked in with the homeless situation in Bennington now, and talking to a lot of people. I made a lot of contacts. It's only been a few months, but people call me now and say, hey, you know, you might want to look at this, or we're doing this, or I hear about something. That particular story, I happened to be looking at something called a Bennington Bulletin. It's just a place where people sell pottery and stuff, and someone mentioned that they met somebody at the coffee club. And so I called, and when I didn't get an answer, I knocked on the door. And a lovely lady told me about it, and we put together a date where we can come and meet some of the people, and asked if it would be okay. And a week ago, I went and had breakfast with a bunch of young families who were struggling with housing, with finances, with children, but there is a little part of the community that is coming together to help. And that's one of those stories that you would never see from a social media company that's located in California, or even a television station on a local issue. Those are real table issues that people care about and people are dealing with every single day. And it sheds some lights on some of the positive things that we're doing as a community to help.
Susan, let me turn to you at this point. Kind of, what's the process for putting the paper together like these days? I mean, a lot of it's very electronic. The old days of copying and pasting, you know, stories on a big gigantic board and shooting a picture of that and sending it off to a printing press are kind of long gone. But how does it work putting the paper together and meeting deadlines and all of that?
Well, it works. It's a little bit of mayhem. We start every morning with sort of a draft budget, and this is, you'll appreciate this, the best laid plans, right? We think we know what our paper's going to look, and then Michael calls from the courthouse, and something has broken there, and it's big and it's huge. So there goes one of my planned stories, and there goes his story. And we meet throughout the day by phone or Zoom, like we're doing now, and figure out what's breaking over the course of a day. The reporters write it, I write. Michael's a photojournalist, so he also will take photos for us around the town. And by the end of the day, our paper doesn't look anything like what we thought it was going to look like at 10 o'clock in the morning. We get stories in by 6-ish, probably, get them edited by people. And then we send them somewhere where they are laid. All our papers go to the same printing press, and they are laid out there and printed there. And probably we put our paper to bed around 9 o'clock every night, and it's been a wild journey over the course of the day of thinking, you know, exactly what your paper is going to look like, to breaking news all day that changes it. And I'll just make a quick point. My readership really notices and appreciates. We actually have people call and say, thank you. We love the news shift to local news. We appreciate what you're doing. We now send our paper out by mail, rather than have it hand-delivered, unless you want to pay a little bit extra for hand-delivery. And we all know what the mail system's like. So we ran into a brick wall on that. And people stuck with us and called and said, you're going in the right direction. We support you and we're going to hang in there. And they have. So, you know, I think breaking news, what's happening in their communities. They want to know what stores are opening, what stores are closing, what restaurants are coming. They want to know what buildings are being sold, what's going on in crime, what's going on in their schools. And as long as over the course of the day, we're constantly updating with fresh breaking news on those fronts, we're keeping our readers fairly happy so far.
Well, it's reassuring to hear that some things haven't changed all that much. About the chaos of starting at 10 o'clock and winding up in a whole different space by 9 o'clock in the evening.
After 3 o'clock in the afternoon, if I call Sue, she answers the phone, what is it? She's got already, she's like already expecting something completely different.
On top of doing all of that, you also have to kind of weave in these breaking stories and probably post them online too, right? I mean, is that that's also
we break them the second we know them. That's the new thing. Once it's done, it is broken online. That's used to be sacrosanct in press, as you'll remember. You held everything for the print edition. You would never let your competition know a day ahead what you had on the front page of your paper. And now it's just a wild free-for-all out there. The second Michael's finished his story, we hit send and it's online because we want people going to that website all day long, curious what's going on in their community. I do it. I go to the Washington Post and the New York Times all day long watching for updates. And I want people in Bennington to go to the Bennington Banner site all day long and watch for updates for news. It's sort of the new frontier.
Yeah, indeed. Wow. I also wanted to ask you both about what you thought about how social media impacts what you do and what have you. It seems like a lot of people nowadays seem to get their news via social media on Facebook or some other platform. And, you know, I, of course, there's been a tremendous lot of discussion and controversy about how accurate a lot of that is and how there are people with agendas of one sort or another that are, you know, putting pieces of information, quote unquote, out there that may or may not be accurate or fully vetted. How do you compete with that? How do you deal with it? And maybe even perhaps it's helpful in some ways to maybe get news leads from it as well. But I just wondered, what are the upsides and downsides to the way social media impacts how people get information nowadays?
Well, I think that's on us, honestly. It's if we stick to our guts on what is trustworthy and what is good and what is right for our newspaper and tell the truth, I think people respond to that over time. It doesn't matter if we're on Facebook or other areas too. I think if people start developing that trust that we're going to be pretty accurate on, very accurate on what we're saying and try and tell both sides of the story, people come to understand and know that. They may have issues politically, but if you're dealing with someone, even if they're not agreeing with you, at least you know where they stand and that you can at least trust what they're putting in there. As far as Facebook helping us, I mean, we just wrote a story the other day of, you know, on a typical local story, a gentleman was charged with driving while intoxicated. He hit a telephone pole. It knocked out electricity to 350 people in town. We found that on Facebook. Somebody who lived there went on Facebook and posted pictures right outside their door of what happened and gave a brief description. The second we found out that morning, we called and talked to that lady and found out our information and went down to the scene and we relayed that. So it actually can be a help for a local paper because it's 1,000 and 10,000 eyes out there that are looking at stuff. Of course, as a newspaper and a trusted newspaper, you have to really vet a lot of that stuff and make sure it's accurate, check with sources and stuff and get double sources. But there's a lot of good information out there that really helps us tell the story and get it out there. And that's actually a good thing.
Susan, let me turn to you here. I guess I just wondered, what are your thoughts on how the industry and perhaps how you do your job at the Banner has changed or been influenced by the arrival of things like Zoom conversations and the whole pandemic in general? How has that impacted your work?
It has evolved. I think during the height of COVID, everybody was working from home. There was a time in my journalistic life when I would not have thought that was possible. I didn't think you could put out a newspaper by working at home or via Zoom. And in fact, you can. We have learned that we don't need the reporters in the newsroom. They need to be out on the street and they can attend meetings by Zoom. They can do three meetings in a day on Zoom, whereas they could have never made it in person to three different meetings in one day. We can cover Montpelier because everything now at the State House is broadcast on Zoom. So if there's a particular issue we're interested in, we can go right to that committee meeting and watch it without having to drive all the way up. I think at the height of this, we all miss that human connection. We miss being in a newsroom together and bouncing ideas off each other. We miss going to meetings where you not only cover the meeting, but you also pick up a lot of news and gossip just by talking to people in the room that you don't get on Zoom. So it's been a game changer, though, because now that it's ending, we are not all rushing back to our newsrooms. We are still taking advantage of what worked well with during the COVID time, but we're new to being back. So I'll see if we get reporters back in our newsroom, or, you know, Michael will stop by and work occasionally just because he's downtown and, you know, he wants to say hi and connect, and maybe perhaps we'll go back to that. I'm not sure. I know that he had to cover courts on Zoom, which has been a really interesting, he could probably speak to that and how that's been a game changer.
Yeah. Tell us, Michael. I mean, that must have been odd. And just to react to what Susan just said there, yeah, it's been great to be able to like go to three select board meetings in one night and be at home. But you definitely also miss the opportunity to question the select board members after the meeting's over, or hear some gossip about, hey, did you hear about so and so doing whatever? And so there's a downside to it as well. Although there have been plenty of times over the winter in particular when I've been very grateful that I didn't have to go outside anywhere. But anyway, and Zoom, that must be interesting.
It's been interesting, and I make it a point to go to the courtroom and watch along with the judge and whoever else is in the courtroom. A lot of times, most times now, the defendant is not in there, and you do lose that, you know, the defendant. I'm thinking of one case where there was a defendant in the courtroom, and at some point, the judge was talking to him, and he hung his head, and he looked up at his parents, and those kind of things you miss on Zoom. You don't see those little intricate kind of intimate moments, but they've done a good job of trying to kind of do what they can, and I'm glad I do it in the courtroom so I could watch and choose what I want to look at. Like I want to watch the judge's reaction to an argument and things like that. And you acclimate yourself to whatever the challenges are. I am looking forward to the day when everybody takes their masks off in the court and we could actually see faces and that defendants are there and defense attorneys are there. And we can catch those little things that you miss on Zoom, but it's been also convenient because you can, for instance, the courts sometimes make their arraignments in Rutland just to, as a switch. And so it would have been impossible to run up to Rutland in a half hour and try and cover something. So you're able to do that. And I've done it even on my phone, but I do miss that human connection of being there in the courtroom. And that's going to come sooner than rather than later, especially as a photographer. I remember during the, one of the ice, do you remember the ice storm a few weeks back?
Oh yeah.
All our reporters were on a 10 a.m. Zoom meeting, and I was calling from my phone on some ice bank somewhere, and I was like, oh, you guys nice and warm, huh? You know, being a photographer, you have to be out there still, no matter what happens, and I love that part of the job. But I also know that that's going to come back. It's we're not going to be on Zoom forever.
Yeah, well, hopefully this time, unlike last summer when we had our brief moment of feeling like, oh, good, that's done. This time it's for real. Because I'm sure we're all, like you say, tired of face masks and stuff like that. I just wanted to ask you before we have to run here, we just finished town meeting season. Any thoughts on any surprises that came out of town meeting season in your coverage area in Bennington and around the county. It seemed to me like a fairly nuts and boltsy kind of year this year, where a lot of the focus seemed to be kind of on, you know, sort of basic stuff and waiting until the COVID pandemic finally does hopefully run its course and what have you. But I guess I just wondered what some of your reactions were to either some of the issues that were on some of the town warnings or candidate races that you may have been following. Anything unusual or noteworthy strike you coming out of that?
In county, in Bennington, Bennington town, turnout was kind of low, which was interesting. I'm not sure I can explain why turnout was low. There were no big gangbuster issues on the ballot, I guess. I found statewide, again, with COVID, we talk about the impact. Turnout's been high because people are switching to Australian ballot. And so for once, people who work or have childcare issues can actually cast ballots. And that's been a good thing. I think some of our smaller communities are missing that in-person meeting, which didn't really happen much. Only two, I think, in my county were in-person meetings. Everything, they did Zoom budget meetings and things. But most of the voting was by Australian ballot. There were a couple of kind of interesting races. There was a school board race where an incumbent who had made some really shocking, improper comments on Facebook was voted out of office, overwhelmingly voted out of office by a newcomer to the scene. And that was an interesting race. And in Shaftesbury, an incumbent was voted out by a woman of color for the first time. They've had a woman of color on the Shaftesbury Select Board. And so that was an interesting race. There seemed to be sort of a shift in, I don't know, modern times maybe, or finally catching up with our select boards. But there weren't huge issues. It was, you know, Manchester had pot sales, legalized pot sales that they passed, which everyone knew they would. And I guess it was just more a nuts and bolts year.
And Michael, was that your reaction? I suppose town meeting was a new thing for you.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm looking forward to those little town meetings. I know this, it's going to seem goofy, but I have a little bit of that Norman Rockwell picture in my mind still of town meetings and people talking of all different persuasions and just trying to kind of work things out and showing up and standing up and talking and stuff. But, you know, it's very interesting living in a small town. I was really happy to see that progress is slow, but it happens. And I think Vermont is becoming part of the bigger nation in that respect too. It's not as insulated as it once was. And although I don't want it to lose that that quaintness and uniqueness that makes it Vermont, it's also, you know, time with a lot of issues that we step up and kind of become part of the greater community as a whole. So,
all right. Well, I guess we're going to have to leave it there for today. Just wanted to thank you both again for making the time for this conversation out of a busy day. And I know, Susan, you're going to go back to that news budget for today and start crossing things out and adding things in. So we'll let you get on to that. But thank you very much for both being here with us and sharing your views from the other side of the paper or whatever.
It's lovely to be talking to one of the best editors I've ever worked with. So thank you, Andrew.
Well, thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate you inviting me here. It was fun.
Well, I'm sure it won't be for the last time. So, you know, get ready.
Okay. Anytime.
All right. Susan Allen, managing editor of the Bennington Banner, Michael Albans, one of their reporters at the Banner, and I should say also the Vermont News and Media Group. Your work goes beyond Bennington. And thanks to all of you for being with us today. Hope you found our program interesting. And, well, we'll see you again the next time. Meanwhile, have a great day.
Thank you for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.